They tell me that in politics, there's a different kind of standard, a different kind of morality that is expected, or that we put up with it. But I tend to see things differently. I strongly believe that as we move towards a society that is supposed to become far more efficient, as we move to compete with the international community, we celebrate the fact that we are taken off another EU blacklist. We celebrate that because we say it opens the door for us to be able to get on with the business of competing for international business on the world stage. We lament this whole question of how long it takes to do this and to do that in Barbados. We say we can speed it up. We are going to make sure that, the process through the courts improves, that we do things digitally, and that in next to no time, we can be on a competitive footing with the likes of Hong Kong and Singapore and places like that. But if we are to be taken seriously, the political leadership has got to set the example. It cannot be that it is one thing for the rest of us and something else for the leadership. Come on, it is not, you're not setting out here to just put licks in leadership, but to be honest about where we really are. I, for one, think that in public and private sector, something has to be done about meetings. It's not just turning up late, I, over the years functioning in journalism, I've seen more than enough of this thing that ministers of government from both the BLP and the DLP behave as though the world must stop and wait for them. So you're supposed to be someplace at 10 o'clock. They pull everybody else together at 10. They turn up at 10:45. And everybody must, the world must stop because they have arrived. Sometimes, I think, I must say, I can understand that once or twice things can, you can overrun. You can appreciate that. But the frequency with which that has happened over the years says you've got to reset this particular approach if you are to set the example to the rest of this community that time matters. Time does not only matter for the start, time also matters for how much time you take up doing simple things. Meetings start at 10 o'clock in the morning. And so you wonder, well, tell me, when are we leaving here at 2:30 or 3 o'clock? What have we achieved by having this meeting go on for so long? Because one person or the other just talk too much and waste too much time. And then you still got to leave that meeting, right? And go and do the other things that were required of you, I say, you can't take anybody seriously when it comes to this whole question of bringing about change and being more competitive and being more productive if we do not work at licking those particular practices. And the politicians in particular need to set the example in that regard. We should not let them get off the hook with that at all, because it's too glaring. It's too obvious for everybody else in this country to see. This is down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, I want to extend my deepest sympathies to you and your family at the passing of your brother.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Now, It is ironic that, or it's interesting that I wanted to mention the name of a minister today, and just in your 12:30 news, the name was called. And that name is Mr. Indar Weir. And I thought of mentioning him today because in my mind, I was trying to rate ministers, leaders, and government on their performance. And I came up with him as probably one of the better performing ministers. And the reason why I say that is because I found that Mr. Weir is really in charge of his ministry. If one were to say anything at all about the ministry, he would be quick to respond. Regardless to where he is, he would get to the radio station and he would respond. And he would answer questions that come before him. And he's usually able to answer almost all of the questions. He's also very accessible. Once, recently, he was on Down to Brass Tacks. And during that program, he issued his cell phone number. And he said, I could do this publicly because I am a servant to the people. If you need me, you should be able to find me. You should be able to get to me. And he said, you could call me night or day. And he sounded genuine, too. He said, look, if it was a night, say 2, 3 in the morning, I could choose to answer my phone or not to answer it. And if I didn't answer, when I get the chance, I would still return your call. So he speaks with a level of confidence, and he's very reassuring. And I find that he never sends forward any of his subordinates, permanent secretary, anybody to answer things. Mr. Weir always come out himself. And it's for these kind of things that I really admire him, because he walks with his ministry always in the palm of his hands. Unfortunately, Mr. Ellis, I cannot say so about the majority of ministers today. I definitely can't say so. There are others, sort of like Mr. Weir, but there are many who are not. And today, I particularly want to focus on the Ministry of Education, because it's a very important ministry. And I can say that definitely, for me, I don't know for other people, the Minister of Education, to me, is not firmly in charge of that ministry and is not as visible as I would like to see. And often when questions are asked pertaining to education, somebody else down the ladder has to deal with it. I can understand that at times, but not to the extent that it is happening. And I find that I have never had an opportunity on the radio, which is the most likely forum that I could get, to speak to Santia Bradshaw directly on any matter pertaining to education. I have to make a call here and then hope that it is answered, and then somebody else has to answer, but never ever is Santia Bradshaw there to respond to questions. And I'm thinking, if you don't want a ministry, why not ask for to be relieved from it? Ask the Prime Minister to be relieved from it and let somebody else take the ministry. Because I find it not such a good thing that our Minister of Education can have the responsibility of the coordinating and packaging of foodstuff to be distributed throughout the country where there are so many other people. We had a lot of people who just crossed the floor from the Democratic Labour Party and went over to the Barbados Labour Party and said that they are willing to put themselves at the disposal of the Prime Minister help. You have the guy with the Finance Creator Workshop, you have Aline, a lot of others. So there are people who can do this job. And I find it strange that a ministry that needs attention at this particular point in time cannot get the attention of the minister. Now, I want to go, Mr. Ellis, to the 17th of January.
Hello?
And Down to Brass Tacks program hosted by Corey Lane.
We lost a little bit of communication.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, that's not my cock. That cock would be at you. That cock that is crying is not at me. Anyhow, you're still there, Mr. Ellis?
Yeah, I'm here.
Right. I want to refer to a program, the Down to Brass Tacks program, that was held on the 17th of January this year by Corey Lane. Now, a lot of things were said on that program. We really need to examine in a bit of detail. Corey Lane started the program by saying he was informed by his tech gurus that there may be inadequate bandwidth within the school system. And he said he had it confirmed by IT persons in the secondary school, which means that there could have been a problem in the delivery of education. Now, I understand that every school was not online, but those that were would have had a problem. Or at least every school probably had computers and computer labs, so the bandwidth could give them trouble there at school too, even if they were not working online at home. My question is, and these are some questions going, I don't know who can answer these because, Sandy, I don't answer your questions. Is this situation brought under control? That is question number one, based on what Corey was saying. So that's question number one, Mr. Ellis. Would you be able to answer that, or you can't answer that?
I can't, no.
All right, okay.
I'm not in a position to do that. All right, thank you very much. Okay. Down to brass tacks. Somebody wants to know, why should the Minister of Education drop everything and speak with this guy directly? That's the person who had called the last caller complaining about Ms. Bradshaw and saying that he was not able to hear from her. And then somebody else suggests that he calls on a regular basis with that kind of criticism. I don't hear all the programs, and I certainly am. Don't hear him calling me with any regularity on it, but if that's what you've been doing, sir, well, people are listening. This person says, good day. There are concerns about this whole rollout for the vaccine. Mr. Ellis, has the vaccine now become mandatory? Not as far as I know. So that means that the other question is invalid. So if so, when did this happen? Did it happen so recently? I'm not aware that the vaccine is mandatory, but there are people who are hinting at it becoming mandatory eventually. I suppose once we get to the point where the vaccine is seen as being more effective and more widely accepted, then you are going to see people impose that necessity, both for movement in countries and movement outside of countries. But we're not at that stage yet, as far as I'm aware. This person says, I want to register my disappointment that having done the right thing and applied, young people with no NCDs have received their vaccine. I know they have their hands full, but it seems that they have not prioritized the cases. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Yes, good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
Yes, my dear. First, I want to say this is my second time calling Brass Tacks and my first time speaking to you.
Oh, a pleasure.
And I haven't heard you laugh yet for the morning. Now, I listen to Brass Tacks every day. Mm-hmm. And when you get somebody attacking you and you laugh, my daughter does laugh louder than you. She just loves to hear you laugh.
Is that so? I wonder what tickles her about my laugh.
I don't know. And all she does say, I love to hear David laugh. Mm-hmm. So she hasn't heard you for the morning, so I know she's listening. So you please laugh, okay?
You gotta give me something to laugh at. All right.
What to tell you that I can get some bits?
Yeah, you're gonna do what?
I'm gonna fry some bits.
You're gonna fry bits? Well, yeah. You know, I could tell you a lot about the frying of bits. You know, Barbadians are perhaps the only people in the Caribbean who put sugar in bits.
Oh.
Everywhere else. Yes, everywhere else across the region, when they do bakes, they will not have that sweet taste that we put sugar in bakes and we put sugar in dumplings. There are other people across the region who do not put sugar in the dumplings the way that we do. You may get just a little bit of a light sweet flavor to it, but never that full blown
sweet sugary taste. Okay.
So how do you make your bakes? You make your bakes with.
I always put meal in my bakes. Number one.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I put a little meal in my bakes, a bare small bit of baking powder, a little sugar, spice, nutmeg, and give my bakes a lick it with a little sunflower or glow spray, a little, and I lick my bakes.
This
and
is
I drop
the, okay. All right.
Okay.
Different techniques.
Yes.
Bakes in the morning or bakes in the evening?
Bakes anytime. I have a granddaughter that love a bake, so I can fry them in the morning and she would have two, and later in the evening she would have two more.
Okay. Nice hear from you. Yes. All right.
Yes.
Have a
good
day.
You enjoy your day too. And make sure that you laugh. My daughter wants to hear that laugh.
All right. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. You can say to the lady, you should have said to the lady, she's a good candidate for a Saturday morning show.
That's for you and Larry.
Yes, she's a prime candidate. So I listen for.
I know you could dance, but I don't know. I'm not too familiar with you as a cook.
No, don't go there. Don't go there. You don't hear how you spread out the menu and how you ask for certain things to be maintained.
You might be a radio cook.
You're
a radio cook.
All right. Time is time.
What you talking about today?
Yeah, I hope you and the family are holding together in your recent bereavement, and that everything is going to remain, you know, well between you all, propping up each other. Because this is a time for that sort of thing. I myself have a relative who's going to bury Wednesday too. So I have my little bit at this neck of the woods too. But okay, and we call us again. Yesterday, my weekend went rather quiet. I observed the movement on the road, et cetera, et cetera. And I had a situation with my grandson yesterday. He had a injury with his heel. So I said, well, I will try to call the hospital to find out what I should do, et cetera, et cetera. And I met a doctor, Nisha Aline, who entertained me cordially, respectfully, and properly, thoroughly. And I also put Torres on the phone to speak to her, so I gave like a kind of rated triage, find out how his foot was suffering, et cetera. She spoke to him, and then she advised me as to what I should do, and concluded by saying, any further thing, then you check with your doctor, which will be today, if need be, so. But I want to commend her and all the concern for COVID and demand and whatever. She's taken the time out to be respectful and to be empathetical in speaking to me. So, Dr.
Isn't that her job? Isn't that the way it's supposed to be?
I shouldn't thank her.
Yeah, you should. But
what are you trying to do? Go on.
No, I'm just saying to you that that's part of what should be happening every time. And I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't congratulate her or thank her for doing it, but do so within the context of making it quite clear that there's a certain standard that she was trained to, and she's only living up to the standard to which she was trained.
You know, at times you get your station inundated with calls with the reverse too.
Yes.
I thank you.
Of course.
I thank you. I want to go on to the second point. The program yesterday, I made some comments regarding, but when it come for comment, I didn't get any comment from Dr. Greenidge because it was muted that he has to wrap up his call and give a closure on his thing, so he didn't get a chance to respond. But I would still want to reiterate and emphasize the program yesterday is laudable and good. for the economy, economists and government ministers and sort of thing. But you see 75% of the persons in Barbados are poor at the rate saying from paycheck to paycheck, living from day to day, going to the grocery, etc. That won't impact on them at all. They don't have no fiscal, they don't have no debt, they don't have no interest rate, they don't have about $968 million and this and that. They don't know those things they're interested in. The real crux of what should be happening now is sustenance and survival, because that is what 75% of the person in countries are faced with, survival and sustenance. That will come later down. I'm not saying you shouldn't pursue or project.
I think that basically the conversation, that the economic conversation or the conversation about the economy is essentially saying to you that notwithstanding how difficult the situation is, Barbados has been able to put itself in a position which is far better than we would have been in had the government not taken certain steps, like going to the IMF and trying to reschedule the debt and that sort of thing. And while it is very difficult for people, I think the narrative that is being put out there is we could have been so much worse off, and we need to be thankful for what has been done so far. And somebody asked the other day, why is it that we're getting all this talk about the economy as a counter to what is happening with COVID? But the truth of the matter is that politically, I could see why it is happening, because this is the positive that the government has. The government is getting a lot of blows on the COVID side right now, but it can look to the how it's handled the economy generally and say, well, you know, we saved the day, because had it not been for those steps, this situation would have been far worse.
I'm not here to disagree with you in regard to giving them kudos and full commendation for what they've done, etc. That has not been my thing. All I'm trying to say is, because they're running the country, they have to put the best foot forward and try to keep things catering to as many persons as practical every time out. I'm not going to say that they would not have done well. And I commend them for all that they've achieved so far. And it's laudable in all the pursuit of the IMF and the popular foreign exchange thing. But I'm still going to maintain that 75% of the persons would not have been really taken on board with yesterday's program in respect of all those figures and all the... That is good jargon for the economists and the ministers and the people that are running and the projection going forward, starting projects and saying, I don't call with that. But I'm saying 75% of the people still out of it saying, as to when they will get some money that's owed to them, when things will soften up for them, and all the other myriad of things, how they're manipulated with the labor situation, when they're laid off, they, you know, when they go back on, and employers carrying them to the war and all this sort of thing, would be the focus and the thing in their mind more thing than what transpired yesterday. I'm not saying there isn't praise to be showered on the government for all that they've achieved, but when you look at it with the majority of Barbadians, that is what they're going to be concerned about, because they're in the majority. 75-80% of the people in Barbados are poor. That's all I'm trying to impute.
Agree. Understood. But you are not among the 75% that wouldn't understand it, though.
I'm not among the 75% that would not understand what the government has achieved.
The jargon and the economic discussion.
I understand. That's why I said that I understand it. But I'm trying to say, like, no, that cannot be put into effect next week. So right now, the most current thing is the food packages. Oh, no, you're talking about that. You see people living in terraces and especially when you get a terrace and what have you, because you see that area don't conclude, or those people are well off and things, because in those terraces you got apartments where people were in normal jobs, gas station, or what have you, in those apartments that need that kind of package. So don't think you can drive through there and drop a package here and there with those people. So if you don't conclude that they want to help, pass through some terraces in development and get a feedback as to how you're catering and the dispensing of the packages also. But you understand, I'm not one of those people that won't understand what the government would be pursuing and on track with what they think, but I'm only putting a call and a case for the 75% of persons that would be more concerned with the sustenance and the and survival right now than any other thing. All the things that they are plagued with, and some of them are the same people calling about rent. And you name it, you know all them.
If somebody wants to know how you end up with 75% of Bajans concerned with their fortune and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that is something I figure off the top of my head, but I know it ain't 2%, though.
Concerned with a fortune teller, you said.
Yeah, I'm not so sure, I have no crystal ball, but you know, I can argue, you know, and be convincing that it's not 2% I'll be in the light of what I'm speaking.
All right.
I'm not so sure.
All right. All right, Ron. Thank you. Look, this person says there, why is it so difficult to have my message read on here? I sent you the above message since 11:55 a.m. and you haven't even looked at it. I get a lot of messages and I can't see them all. But let me read this. Make sure that I satisfy you, because you tell me that you're 75, 74 years old. Therefore, I have to respond to your request. On the 11th of February, when it was advertised that we should register for the vaccine, my neighbor and I, who are over 70 years old with underlying illnesses and are residents of Christchurch, registered immediately. And up to this day, the 22nd of February, have not had a call to get the vaccine. I know of lots of people between the ages of 18 and 70 years old that have had calls and received calls to get their vaccines. I am curious as to what method they are using to call the over 70s to get vaccines. And I wish someone from the unit responsible for making the calls could come to your program and explain how it is being done and in what order. Thank you. David, please read it on the air, as I never seem to get my messages read out. Well, I've read yours for sure. All right. And again, you struck a theme that has been struck by so many other people here today, which is that something has gone wrong with the rollout for the people who are in the older age group, the over 70s. And I hope that the Ministry of Health isn't even dealing with that. I think it's being dealt with by the Defense Force, Major Clark and others there. So perhaps you need to take a look at that and review the processes and procedures so that we can better satisfy these people in the vulnerable group. Let me take another call, perhaps the last call today, down to Brass Tacks.
Yeah, David?
Yes, hi.
How are you, man?
I'm well, and you?
Sorry to hear about what happened to your brother.
Well, you're not alone,
not only your brother, all those who...
All the other people out there, yes.
And I'm sorry to say that I can't get you. I had three topics I wanted to talk about, but I don't have the time. I want to talk about the monument in down in Old Town, because the date is wrong. And I would hope that the Prime Minister would be able to change it, because it should be May the 14th, 1625. Anyhow, and I wanted to talk about Leon. Leon and I had a conversation about that some time ago, about 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
And I heard that somebody, I don't know if it's the Prime Minister and somebody from overseas, talk a little about it. And I have something very important I want to talk about that. And another thing I want to talk about, the Queen. So I can't talk about those things.
So you got to come back another day.
So I hope to come back again. But
all
I got,
right.
You know, that Leon thing is very important. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, this person wants to sign off on a positive note. They say, I don't have a complaint, but I want to add a little balance. We signed up our 82-year-old mother on Saturday, the 13th of February. We received a phone call on Thursday, the 18th, telling us that her appointment was scheduled for 10 o'clock on Saturday, the 20th, at St. Christopher's School. Everything was over by 12:30 p.m. and she is fine. Wonderful. You see, it's not all bad news. You get good news, you get bad news, you get balance, you get whatever you want. Whatever comes to us that we can share with you. Thank you all very much. This has been the Monday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Special thanks to John Stout, the technical operator and producer. I'm David Ellis. I wish you a great afternoon.